We are joined by Joel Kotkin. He's the author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism. He's an Urban Futures Fellow at Chapman University in California, and he's Executive Director at Urban Reform Institute. Joel, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, thanks for joining us, Joel. You wrote a barn burner of a piece that really not just caught my attention, a number of people's attention over the weekend. It was titled A Middle Class Rebellion Against Progressives is Gaining Steam. And I think part of why a lot of people really enjoyed the article, Joel, is because they're hoping you're right. I think that's, people reading it with some wishful thinking here. But you do make a compelling case. Let's break this down a little bit for people. What do you think are the excesses of the left that are becoming a problem for middle-class Americans?
Well, again, I would take this from the perspective that those of us, most of my life have been a Democrat, so I would also like to see changes within the Democratic Party, which may be difficult, but I think that it's not just conservatives. I mean, one doesn't expect that right-wingers are going to like a Democratic government. You know, they're going to complain no matter what. It's the extreme nature of what's happening that is, yes, it's certainly bothering the right, but it's also bothering a lot of liberal people, a lot of intellectuals, people like Andrew Sullivan, Matt Taibbi, Glenn Greenwald, this sort of authoritarian change in progressive politics, incredibly intolerant, very negative about the history of the United States, very much anti the entire the inheritance of Western civilization. And I always make the point to people, I said, why do you think people from other countries come here? Do you think people come from Mexico or from Syria or from Iran so that they can live under the systems that were developed there? I don't think so. What our society offers is the ability of people, no matter what their background, to actually get a chance to live in a relatively free environment and to succeed. I mean, if you take a look, for instance, Democrats' obsession with racism, but you go around and you see, well, Hispanics are, they're making progress. Asians are definitely making progress. We have a huge influx of people from Africa. I guess they don't seem to be so bothered by the racism. They're coming to America because, you know what? It's better to raise your children in Houston than in Nigeria. I mean, that's just the way it is. And somehow Americans, I think, of all ideologies and races, intuit that these faculty lounge media accounts really don't tell very much about what the reality is.
So you mentioned a number of people across the political spectrum who are observing this, Joel, and we've definitely covered many of those individuals. We've had Glenn Greenwald on the show before, for example. I'm curious to know what you see as the place of Joe Biden and his government in this shift, because when you look at the election results from November, you see Joe Biden taking Arizona, he's taking the Democrats win both Senate seats in Georgia. That seemed like a recipe for a moderate, middle of the road government, and yet it doesn't seem to be how things have played out so far.
Well, I think there are sort of two Biden administrations, if you will. First of all, I'm not so sure how much he's in control of anything. Okay, I'm just dubious. I mean, he was never the sharpest knife in the drawer anyway. And I'm old enough to know that when you get older, certain parts of your cognitive abilities get weaker. And I'm quite a bit younger than Biden is. But I think there are two things going on. I think on many of the very top positions, he's gone with more or less mainstream, regular Democrats, what you would expect. It's his appointments at the secondary level in the more minor posts, not state, not treasury, that he's allowed in more and more sort of militant types. And then He seems to be very, very concerned about the pressure that comes from the, you know, the sort of the squad, you know, the far left factions. And a lot of the people that they're appointing into administrative positions are very much from the further left. So, in other words, what you're going to get is you're going to get, for instance, insane things like, let's spend $1 billion on, you know, critical race theory in public schools. I don't think that's going to be very popular. Let's spend 3 times more on transit than on fixing the roads in a country where basically 1% of all trips are on transit. I mean, it's stuff that makes no sense from a the kind of Democrat I thought Joe Biden would be, which would be sort of more in the Clinton, Bill Clinton mold. But he seems to have gone more Obama and without, I think, President Obama's savvy and ability to communicate. We've got to remember, Joe Biden was elected basically because the oligarchs who dominate this country these days didn't want Bernie Sanders to be the candidate. They hated Donald Trump, which is understandable because he's kind of despicable anyway. But so they lost, you know, they didn't want Bernie because Bernie was a real socialist. So what they did is they supported Biden as a substitute so that they didn't have to deal with a Sanders versus Trump race. And this is a guy who, basically there was never any big Joe Biden cult or Joe Biden enthusiasm. You know, there's no Trudeau mania, if you're going back to at least the first Trudeau. Just so you know, my wife's a Canadian citizen and from Montreal, so I'm reasonably
familiar. Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And actually, and much of her family either lives in Montreal or Toronto. But the reality is that Biden's problem is that the whole next wave of Democrats are increasingly militant, increasingly intolerant, increasingly hysterical on issues like climate, increasingly hysterical about issues of race. He doesn't seem to be able to push back.
Yeah, Joel, so with the last minute we have before we hit the commercial, I just want to get your thought on what is it about the middle class in America you think that makes that voter particularly off-put by those aspects of the Democratic agenda? Are there certain priorities or experiences in middle-class America right now where the Democrats are coming across as out of touch?
Well, certainly Americans are moving to suburbs. They've been moving to suburbs for 50 years. It's been accelerating in recent years and, of course, accelerated after COVID. The Biden administration policy is kind of hostile to suburbs. You know, they want to force them to densify. They want to take away their zoning rights. They want to force them to take, you know, people from the inner city. You know, after all, these are many people who left the inner city for a reason. So I think that's one. Education, the destruction of charter schools, the idea that that education is really about indoctrination. I don't think that's very popular among parents.
I would hope not. We are continuing our conversation with the author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism. He is the Urban Futures Fellow at Chapman University, Executive Director at the Urban Reform Institute, based out in California, Joel Kotkin. Joel, before the break, we were talking about the middle class rebellion that you wrote about growing against progressives. You know, when I think of the sort of, political agenda of progressives in the Democratic Party, I think of the Green New Deal. And I know that's something you've had a lot to say about in the past. For those of us who don't know what the Green New Deal is, could you break down what exactly is the Green New Deal proposing for the future of America? And why are you concerned about it?
Well, first of all, the Green New Deal, and this is from the author of the Green New Deal, who was an aide to Alexandria Cortez, was basically not just to change the environment, but to change the economy. So it's very much about sort of central planning. Everything will be judged by climate. And we will impose all sorts of regulations that are extremely difficult, for instance, in terms of energy costs. You know, we've had essentially the Green New Deal here in California, and it has basically led to the decline of the middle class, the highest poverty rate in the country, in a state with the greatest creation of wealth probably in the last 100 years. So basically what you've got is an economy where it doesn't make any sense to do anything tangible that relies on energy. Then you're talking about losing all sorts of jobs in this country, and obviously Canada even more so if you followed the same patterns. Canada obviously is very, very dependent on resource extraction and energy production, and under these roles, I mean, you would end up literally ending the fossil fuel industry, even at a time when you really are still dependent on them. You're probably looking at a world in which there are far less good blue-collar jobs, for sure, where money is being spent on transit systems that people don't use, where automobiles go back to being something that really wealthy people have, not something that's used by most people. I mean, there's a whole series of things. I mean, there are even talk about, well, we're going to build, AOC talks about, let's build mass transit, high-speed rail between cities. In a country the size of the United States or Canada, this is kind of ridiculous because, the distances are too great. And we know from our case here in California that these systems are very, very difficult to build, very expensive, tend to huge overruns. So basically, the Green New Deal is really, in a sense, a way to turn the United States into Belgium. I don't know. It's almost as absurd as that. Look, it's perfectly makes sense. If you're in the Netherlands or Belgium, you're in a little country. Things are not very far apart. Maybe you could have this orientation, but you certainly can't have it in a country the size of the United States, Canada, and Australia. Three countries I actually know pretty well. So there's that aspect, and there's this notion that, and this is really runs through almost all of what President Biden is trying to do, everything is national. Localities have no ability to decide pretty much anything for themselves. All the priorities will come from Washington. This is very different than the Constitution. Also, by the way, very different from what you would have in Canada, where provinces, have quite a bit of leeway. So I think that what it really is, it's about a transformation of the country into something very different than what it's been. It's not really necessarily just cut GHG. You want to cut GHG without destroying the economy. There's something called nuclear power, which, would help. Natural gas, obviously, has been the biggest source of reductions. Then you're going to go all electric, while you're reducing your electric capacity, particularly reliable electricity. When someone like AOC gets a degree in economics from, I think, Boston University, you wonder, well, what the hell are they teaching in those classrooms? Because anybody who studies economics and follows trends knows that there are many, many very negative economic results from something like the Green New Deal. But what you've got is you've got a coalition of the sort of progressive left, and then you've got Wall Street and another group, a group of, people who, they want a disruption because then they get to invest in green energy programs, which, for instance, here in California, they don't pay property taxes. Well, I mean, that you essentially get guaranteed profits. So for the Wall Street people and the tech oligarchs, this is great. For the average American, for the industrial sector, for agriculture, for home building, it's a disaster.
Joel, we've only got another couple minutes with you, but I'd like you to maybe play the role of a psychologist a little bit here. I'm curious to know why you think There are certain, you know, political, ideological movements that seem hell-bent on radical transformation, regardless of what the evidence seems to indicate. Because one of the reasons I get very uncomfortable with the, you know, sort of radical left or the far left, whatever language you want to apply to them, is they seem to really want to transform the world according to their wishes. And so communities like mine, I'm a Black Canadian, we get sort of used then as like the justification for their radical transformations. And they don't really, it seems like they don't even really want our community to be more successful, because they need somebody to be suffering so badly to justify these big changes. So I know there's a lot there, but you know, in the last 90 seconds we have you, I'm curious to know what you think of the motivations behind this stuff.
Well, I have to say one of the negative parts of this has been comes from academia. You know, think about this. You know, like if you look at Black Lives Matter, a lot of the leadership is academics, and they're people who, you know, they live in their own world. I mean, James Carville, who ran Bill Clinton's campaign, said that, you know, the Democratic Party has become the party of the faculty lounge. You know, we're talking about a party where where you have to use the right pronouns, and you. And you have to basically follow sort of the party line on every issue, and so I think that it's the fact that this is a socially isolated group. It's geographically isolated. You know, these people either they unless they're in the college town, they're overwhelmingly going to be in New York, Washington, San Francisco, L.A., a few in Chicago. Over the rest of the country, you know, really doesn't matter. So these people are socially isolated. They feed on each other. And because our once great newspapers, and I worked for them at one time, Washington Post, New York Times, L.A. Times, have become essentially mouthpieces of the progressive left, there's no check on them. There's nobody saying, well, no, maybe this doesn't really make sense, because increasingly the
Joel, I'm gonna have to stop you here for time, but I really do appreciate you joining us. I hope to have you back.
Okay, great. My pleasure. Okay.
Take care, Joel. That was Joel Kotkin from Chapman University.